south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, this show goes out Sunday, December 12th, 2021. That means all you guys and gals interested in coming to my Expat Insider Seminar, which is now 100% on and scheduled, well, you can go to expatplanb.com for all the info and sign-up details. First day of the seminar launch is Friday, February 18th, finishing on Thursday night, February 24th. All taking place a little over 2 months after this show, today's show, goes out. And if you want to go for Guatemalan residency, that is, kill two birds with one stone, you have just enough time if you start in the next 2 weeks to get that paperwork going. Better start right away because normally it takes about a month to get all that stuff together. Mostly because you have to wait for that FBI good conduct report and get it apostilled. And all that's done by snail mail, though it can be done in a month. They do have fast-track procedures if you pay a little extra dough. Now, I have a step-by-step report on how to apply for Guatemalan residency. Just send me an email, theexpatfinals@gmail.com, and I'll send it off to you. Thing is, though, the holidays are coming up, right? So that might slow things down a bit. Because with birth certificates and FBI reports, etc., you'll be dealing with U.S. government agencies. Slugs in the best of times. So if you're looking to come down to the seminar and start that residency process, chop chop. You got to get going on it. Can you still say chop chop, or is that racist now? So sue me, but you better do it chop chop. Oh, and regarding COVID testing and all that, as far as the seminar goes, the first leg of the seminar will be in Guatemala, so you'll have to get a rapid antigen test 72 hours before you fly. Now, I know most of you listeners are on the same page regarding these COVID tests. They're all BS, but, you know, it's politically motivated stuff and you have to do it. So at least you don't have to wait a day or two to get results, like with that even more ridiculous PCR test. At least with that rapid antigen test, you get your results within the half hour. So you get that stupid test in the States or wherever. You fly into Guatemala. After spending some time there, we head south to El Salvador. And crossing the border, we've got the rapid antigen thing covered on that too, so don't worry. Then, after our time in El Salvador, it's back to Guatemala again. We've got that antigen test thing covered there too. Don't worry about that. Then it's back to the U.S. or whatever crumbling first world country you're coming from. Oh, and by the way, for all you unvaxxed folks out there who've been sending me emails asking about Expat Eddie's vax hack, you know what I'm talking about. Well, I've got nothing to do with that, but when you come down to the seminar, according to Expat Eddie, all will be revealed. Oh, and remember, I'd never advocate anyone doing anything illegal. I'm just here to report on how gringos and expats live, work, play, and or do business. You know, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. You could say I'm sort of like a real old-school journalist who doesn't have to suck up to advertisers and sponsors. For me, it's just the facts, ma'am, along with the real, and I mean real, science. Not government or politically motivated science. I don't push anyone's version of fake news. But in doing that, you know, I've made lots of social media enemies. I'll get into that later, either this show or next. But you know what they say, the proverbial they. In this case, we know the they. I'm talking about men at war, what men at war say. And believe me, guys like me and listeners like you are at war with social media. And what do men at war say? The more flack you get, the closer you are to the target. Now, one more thing about the seminar. I've got a long list of people who want to attend, including people who paid up for the last seminar that kept getting canceled due to lockdowns and COVID crap. You know the story. Now, since I announced the February seminar dates, I've been getting a trickle of emails from people saying, February is just not a good time for me. Excuses are trickling in. Like, for example, I already used my vacation days, or work doesn't like it when I take off. Or I'll wait till your next seminar or the one after that. You do know I haven't done one in a year and a half, right? I get it. We're all busy. But you should know this. I do not need to do these seminars. For one, I don't need the COVID at airport aggravations. And I don't need the money. Remember, I'm the guy who got into Bitcoin at 60 bucks. Or was it 80? Something like that. So don't ever think I'm doing these seminars for the money. Or that I need to do them for any reason. They have to be fun, entertaining, and amusing for me, too. Now, I might sound like a jerk, but I don't need to do anything that isn't a little bit fun and interesting for me. So the pleasure-to-pain ratio has to be way over unity. That means one in mathematics. But you knew that already, right? And the way things are going in this world, the crazier things are getting. There is a good chance this could be my last seminar. It all depends how smoothly this one goes. And if there are any hiccups that rub me the wrong way, well, then we'll just call it a day and that'll be the end. So that's just a little reminder to you folks out there who are skipping the February seminar thinking you'll just attend one in the future. Don't take it for granted there's going to be another seminar. You know how badly things are going up in the States. Why wait for it to get worse? Just think of the monkey wrench this COVIDia thing has already thrown into the mix in just these last 2 years. I've been doing two a year for the last 9 years. And now this COVIDia thing comes up and I haven't done one in 2 years. And of course, during that period, we rescheduled the seminar a few times and had some false starts. And each time I started the ball rolling again and had to cancel, all due to some related COVIDia thing, lockdowns, quarantines, I don't have to go into it. Every time we had to reschedule, it was time wasted. So many places we normally visit on the seminar were affected, including our favorite hotels and restaurants and hangout joints, either shut down or limited hours or just impossible to deal with. All those false starts for me and my team were just total time wasters. You see what I'm saying? Dozens of hours of planning in the crapper. Just think of the reservations and deposits that have to be reshuffled when you reschedule a seminar. Those are the kind of things you encounter, the roadblocks, the unknowns that make me hesitant to commit. And I've hardly mentioned the fact that the airport thing's a nightmare. I've been traveling a lot lately, and I know. So bottom line, don't be so confident you can skip the February seminar and come to the next one. Just saying. Enough said about that. On with the shoe. First, a real short, sweet email from Hector. He says, Johnny, let's try to inject a little logic into this COVID situation. Let's see now. You need a Vax ID card to go into various stores, banks, and pharmacies, right? But if you ask people who vote to show an ID at the polling booth, that's considered racist, right? Yet at our southern border, Biden's letting in tens of thousands of unvaxxed illegals. Meanwhile, back in California, hordes of looters are breaking into high-end department stores, knowing full well if they steal items less than $900, they'll never get prosecuted. Have you seen the videos, Johnny? The real crime there, according to AOC and her social Democrat buddies, is that those looters, they're not practicing social distancing at all, so it's a case of unsafe looting. Those looters are shedding viruses. Some nerve, huh? Signed, Hector. Well, Hector, that's reason 4,456 through 58. Why, it's absolutely imperative to get the hell out of Dodge. So, Hector, how's your plan B coming? All right, moving on. I mentioned I was going to finish that expat Eddie story. The one about his new gringo neighbor buddy, a guy named George whose Spanish sucks and he lives in the same residential tower as Eddie. Eddie's the only other gringo in the building, and he's asked for Eddie's help as a sort of translator slash shoulder to lean on in a strange kind of robbery case where the suspects are the guy's cleaning lady and a couple of workers who've been in and out of his house for months doing a complete remodeling job on the place. So as it turns out, George hired a reputable architect to redesign his place, and the architect hired a reputable contractor slash engineer who brought in workers every day. And after the job was done and George moved back in, he had the builder bring in two workers just for an hour or so to fix a leaky window in his master bedroom. But something happened that day. That's the point of this whole story. Now, to get a more detailed picture on this, you should go back to the last show and listen to the second half of it. I don't want to go through all the preliminary details again. Go back and listen. You can get them there. So anyway, George called a meeting at 5 in the afternoon, asked Eddie to be there to translate for him, because the architect and the engineer spoke a little bit of English, but not enough to go through details like this, and Eddie was to act as his translator and witness and moral support, too. Now remember, it was just the architect and engineer coming over at 5. They didn't know why. George just said, come on over, we need to talk. And they did actually show up at 5. You see, the architect and engineer were Latinos who, believe it or not, went by gringo time, not mañana time. And if you remember, as mentioned in the last show, they were both well-respected and had done many, many high-end upscale projects. So they actually arrived on time, proving there are a small number of Latinos who have adapted to gringo habits and tell time by the actual clock. So George introduced Eddie as his gringo translator. They went into the master bedroom, and he walked over to that little electric switch plate, which had served as his secret little safe. The one he used as a secret stash for $4,000. And as he explained how the dough went missing, he had their complete attention. George explained how the event had to have happened on Monday when only his cleaning lady and the two workers sent by the engineer were in the room. George made it very clear that only three other people, besides George and his wife, that is, had access to the room that day. Well, it only took a few seconds for the engineer to get all ruffled up. He was quite irritated and indignant at the accusation. He was insulted. But who wouldn't be, right? He began explaining, very abruptly, that one of the guys, the older guy named Damien, he sent in, he'd been working with for 15 years. He was a 50-something guy, a master carpenter, and he did really great work. He was a guy the engineer contractor had complete faith in, you could tell. Though he said he didn't know much about the guy's helper, because he said Damien wasn't under exclusive contract to him, he just used him for various jobs. But he didn't know the helper, the younger kid, was Damien the carpenter's relative, his nephew. Then the engineer/contractor started talking about his own reputation, again spouting about the outrageousness of the accusation, saying things like he'd been in business 20-something years, and in all that time, no one in his crews have ever been accused of stealing anything. Now, up to this point, the architect hadn't said a thing. She just looked rather embarrassed by the whole mess, saying too that in her 10 years of designing and building things, she'd never been confronted with a thing like this either. Now remember, the architect and the construction engineer were not in the building on that Monday in question. So they weren't in the hot seat, but they were responsible for the people they contract, the people on their team. Which brings us to George's cleaning lady, who the engineer and architect immediately suspected. The architect said a couple of times, 9 out of 10 times in cases like this, it is the cleaning lady. So bottom line, nothing was settled, and neither the cleaning lady or the two workers knew they were being accused of anything. So far, only the people at the meeting knew about it. But as Eddie pointed out, they were getting nowhere. Until George piped up and said, here's what we're going to do. $4,000 is not chicken feed. If it was only $100 or even $400, we could agree to disagree and leave it alone. But $4,000, that's more than a year's salary for the average worker. Then the engineer contractor piped up and said, that's all the more reason to suspect your cleaning lady. Because Damien the carpenter makes 3 or 4 times that. I seriously doubt, he said. In fact, I think it's impossible he'd risk his whole career over just a couple of months' pay. I just don't see it, he said. It's ridiculous. Now, Eddie said the more the engineer spoke, the more George, the owner of the place, started doubting his own hypothesis. After all, it was George's own wife that said he was pretty forgetful at times. Then George said, here's what I think we should do. We should give all three of them a lie detector, a polygraph. And George said, I'll pay for it. Then came the famous last words from the engineer. He said, I'm so certain that my guys had nothing to do with this. If you polygraph them and they're guilty, I'll pay the $4,000 and the cost of the polygraph. Then George said, I'll even take the polygraph myself. And the engineer, not to be outdone, said, I'll take a polygraph too. And he spoke with a real edge to his voice, Eddie said. So at least they all agreed on that. So you might wonder how Eddie was feeling about all this since he wasn't involved at all, except as a translator/witness. Well, he told me he was enjoying every minute of it. Then Eddie piped up. He said, I've been through this thing before. I've polygraphed a couple of my employees. And for now, the best thing to do is not to say anything to anyone. That was his advice to all three of them. Don't tell your two employees, he told the engineer. And he said to George, don't let on to your cleaning lady. Don't give him any details. Leave that to the polygraph guy. Then George says, I guess I'll look for a polygraph company. It's a big city. There's got to be a few of them around here. So that was the end of that meeting, and no one was happy, especially George. He expected a little more rationality out of the engineer. He was surprised he so rabidly defended his crew, though maybe that's what you do when you've been working with someone for 15 years and you've had no problems. So anyway, they left, and George had no idea what to do next. He didn't speak Spanish. He didn't know how to find a reputable polygraph company. He didn't know the costs either. As Eddie put it, George didn't know Dick. But Eddie told him it cost between $200 and $300 a person. And to remember that if George is wrong about it, and they test the three people, plus him, plus his wife, plus the engineer and the architect, that'd be almost $2,000 of good money after bad. He'd be out closer to $6,000, not just $4,000. That gave old George something to think about. Anyway, Eddie said, don't worry, I've been through this before. The polygraph guys will only want to test three people, the two workers and the cleaning lady. Eddie assured him that they won't polygraph the owners of the house. They have no reason to. So the good news is, Eddie said, if you're wrong, you're only out at about an extra grand or less. On top of that, 4 G's, of course, but it is your call, nobody else's. And in that moment, George said to Eddie, I don't know, Eddie. Maybe my wife is right and my memory is shot. But $4,000's a lot of money. I just don't know. But there is one thing I know. Whatever happens, whether we find out who did it or not, me and the wife are going to make a lot of enemies. And Eddie said, don't worry, George. You started the ball rolling and the word will spread. So you already have. But you've got one big thing in your favor. The engineer said in front of the architect and you and me, you heard it, that he'd pay the $4,000 and the cost of the polygraph if one of his boys failed the test. And being that he's got a reputation to uphold, for my money, Eddie said, if it comes down to it, he'll pay. Then Eddie said, how'd you find this architect anyway? He said she'd remodeled a couple of the apartments in the building. He'd run into her over and over in the elevator, and they got to talking. So when George was ready to remodel, he did a walkthrough, and everything looked super fine to him. She had multiple projects going and did really good work. And since she knew all the good, bad, and ugly builders around, and George, the gringo, as Eddie said, didn't know Dick, he hired her. Barring that, he could have thrown a dart at the classifieds or ask around at the nearest gringo expat bar, which is a bad idea, you know. Or found an architect on a local version of Craigslist. You know, in Central America, it's called OLX.com, and they changed the name to Encuentro24.com. And in the Dominican Republic, where George's and expat Eddie's residential tower happens to be, their equivalent buy-sell website is called Corotos.com. That's Corotos.com. That's where you can buy and sell and find everything and anything, including architects, engineers, builders, plumbers, carpenters, everything. Though whether they're good or not, or honorable, or on time, you have to do your own investigating on that count. But again, all those aforementioned sites are in Spanish. Anyway, George thought for a while and said, Eddie, I'll do it. Can you help me find a polygraph guy? Eddie said, sure, they're called polygraphistas. And it took Eddie only 15 minutes to shag down three different polygraph companies in the local area. Of course, Santo Domingo, the capital of Dominican Republic, has around 6 million people, so they've got plenty of everything. Then Eddie told George that he almost got into the polygraph business himself. Yep, expat Eddie almost became a polygraphista. How'd that happen, or almost happen? Well, back in the day when the internet was just starting up in Latin America, around 2005, that was when he started franchising his sushi joints, and he figured it'd be a good idea to start polygraphing certain people, managers and stuff, before he hired them. And back then, he just couldn't locate a service that seemed dependable to him. They were few and far in between, and some didn't pick up the phone, and others, he'd leave a message on their machine, and they wouldn't return his calls at all. We're talking about the Guatemala, El Salvador area in Central America. Remember, that was around 2005. So believe it or not, Eddie called me up, and I did a little investigating. Actually bought a couple of books and manuals and CDs on how the polygraph thing worked. Checked out some of the brands, honed in on a machine that was, I think, around $2,500. But that's as far as we got. We almost started a business out of it. So Eddie and I know a little bit more about the polygraph business than the average slug, that's for sure. And we also know they can be defeated. Look it up on the internet. There's all kinds of YouTubes on how to defeat a polygraph machine. However, experienced polygraph testers, the guys giving the test, polygraphistas, they know all about how you can defeat a machine too, so they're tuned in and have an eye out for it. But know this, and here's what I've learned. You can't really defeat the machine, but what you can do is disqualify yourself as a testable subject. In other words, just like hypnosis, where there's some people, a small percentage of the population that just cannot be hypnotized. They're not susceptible, not good candidates. Same thing, there's a small percentage of the population that when polygraphed will show indeterminate or indecisive results. Some people are just not good candidates. Because you know, or maybe you don't. The first thing the polygraph guy does is set up some baseline true questions. True things. Things you won't lie about, like your name, age, address, nationality. Are you an American? Do you live in Chicago? All those true answers will set up baseline readings. And with false answers to true questions, your respiration will change, your galvanic skin response, pulse rate, diaphragm movement, and other measures will vary. That's how you can tell if someone's lying. They're measured against the more calm baselines recorded for the truthful readings. Now, suppose in the beginning of the exam, when the polygraph guy is laying down some truthful baselines, your pulse, respiration, and your galvanic skin responses are all over the place. That's not normal. Well, that happens with a small percentage of people who then are deemed poor candidates for a polygraph test. Inconclusive. Case closed. And you can learn all those methods on YouTube. So why am I going through all this? Well, bear with me, because here's what happened next. Oh, just one more thing. Turns out only really highly intelligent persons can defeat a polygraph machine and fool the polygraphista. Average people and dummies need not apply. They get caught every time. Because when smart people want to lie on a test, they'll read up on it beforehand, read everything they can, check out the many YouTubes. Practice makes perfect and all that. And here's the thing, and polygraph people will tell you this all the time. The average person thinks a polygraph test is black and white. They fully believe it can catch you in a lie. And when they walk in for the test, they're tense and scared about that. They're all fairly nervous, even if they're telling the truth, which somewhat heightens all those responses and amplifies those responses when you lie, too. So when you ask a polygraph operator how accurate are those things, they'll tell you, and this is pretty un-PC, actually, but the truth often is. They'll tell you on the QT. For average and below average persons being tested, they're almost dead on. But for highly intelligent people who are intent on lying, they can sometimes beat it. Not to mention people who take tranquilizers before a test, like Valium or Lorazepam, things in that pharmacological family. That'll calm a person way down and mute or attenuate some of those responses. Oh, and you probably knew this. Psychopaths and sociopaths, that includes most people living in D.C., are no match for a polygraph. Because, for example, with politicians, lying is a part of their lives. It comes natural to them. For some people, lying has no measurable physiological effect. And that's what the machine's checking, right? All right, so then what happened next? Well, Eddie found George a service that would do people at $250 a crack. So within a day or two, the polygraph guy came over. Eddie was there too. And George went through the story with him. Then the polygraph guy pulled out three release forms, which each of the three candidates had to sign along with producing their cedulas and or passports. And at the same time, he said, if one of the other of those three does not want to sign this, you've got your man or woman. And he also said, and remember, Eddie relayed this story to me, so I might be screwing up some of the details. He said, when I ask the questions, I'm not going to use the exact amount of money. I'm just going to say the money. And I'm specifically going to use your apartment number, i.e. George's apartment number, when referring to the robbery. He said, I'm not going to say the bedroom or the master bedroom, because then in their mind, they can start rationalizing. He said, for example, it's better to ask the question, did you steal the spare tire from the car, than to say, did you steal the spare tire from the trunk of the car? Make the questions easy and simple. Anyway, the release forms were signed, a day was set up for the polygraph, and the three suspects went in at different times for the test. First, the cleaning lady. Her results? Well, she passed quite nicely, with a 96.5% truth accuracy rating. By the way, the polygraph guy, the polygraphista, he said his initial first impression before he even did the test was that she probably wasn't involved. Because with that amount of money in her hand, $4,000, which is more than a year's salary for her, she would likely have never returned to work again. And if she did, she'd have been way too nervous to consent to a polygraph. But she did, he said, and was nervous like all people are before a polygraph, everyone is, except true sociopaths. Because even people who are totally innocent have a certain distrust of technology, and the questions can be rough and blunt. Oh, and this is funny, the polygraphista guy said that a cleaning lady brought in a cop with her. Turns out he was her uncle or something, a tough customer who grilled the polygraph guys over and over again. He said he was against his niece signing the release form, but he knew if she didn't, everyone would think she was guilty. In fact, he wanted to go into the exam room with her, but that, of course, is not allowed. Next up was the young carpenter's helper. Eddie says his name was Elvis. How could you forget that? And his results, he got caught three times trying to fool the machine using certain respiration and diaphragm techniques you can find easily on the internet. He was judged a liar with the probability of him being involved in the robbery, 97%. And finally, we have Damien, the carpenter, who the engineer supported unconditionally as an honest and trustworthy guy. He failed the test completely and on all pertinent points. And man, was George relieved. For one, it vindicated him in front of his wife, who thought he was going nuts or that early Alzheimer's was kicking in. Two, that he was right and correct in ordering that polygraph test. And three, that he'd made a great decision getting his cleaning lady. She was a good and honest person. Then came the showdown. The architect came, the engineer came. Remember, they knew nothing yet. However, most unexpectedly, the engineer slash contractor brought the two suspects, his workers, with him. And now they all were going to hear the results for the very first time. So the paperwork was handed to the engineer explaining the graphs and the questions that were asked. He looked it over, saw the results, and instantly tried to start finding fault with the methods, the questions asked, but it was a very well done report, lots of detail, and lots of stuff to pick at. So then he turned to the older guy and said, "The test said you lied." And the older guy practically jumped out of his seat. And to the younger guy, he said, "The test said you lied too," and tried to trick the polygraph. Then a kind of a shouting match broke out. This was a week or two after the incident. So the two guys had days and days to get their story together. And then the older guy, who was furious since he'd just been called a liar, he said, "Why did you only polygraph three people? There were other people in the house." Yeah, one was George, like he was going to steal his own money. Then the older guy said, "Why didn't George's wife take the polygraph? She was there too. And what about the other guy that was in the house?" He said that even though the sign-in book at the front desk, the ledger that has to be initialed by workers and guests, showed only three people had signed in that day, namely him, the carpenter, his assistant, and the cleaning lady. That didn't seem to matter to him. He kept insisting there was another male person there in the house that day, someone who hadn't signed in, a phantom. But man, when he insinuated that George's wife possibly stole the money, well, he shouldn't have done that. That was a bad move on his part. Being the fiery Latina that she is, she walked over to the door, opened it, and threw him out. She said, "No one accuses me of being a thief in my own house." And then the engineer, who was really on the spot, his reputation at stake, furiously sticking up for his boys, said, "I don't agree with these results." He said, "Where did you get this polygraph guy?" He sort of insinuated collusion, as if George somehow had a buddy who had a polygraph business. And remember, all this is going down fast now, in Spanish, with Eddie translating furiously. Then George's wife said to the engineer, "Well, if you don't agree with the results, you can always find your own polygraph guy. There are plenty of them on the internet. But we did our part, and it's on your dime." And with that, the engineer got up and said, "That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get another polygraphist. Adios." So he was sticking up for his workers to the bitter end, even though they both tried to fool the machine and got caught in multiple lies. So never mind the actual results, at the bitter end, there was a communication breakdown. Whether the engineer forks out for a second polygraph test, Eddie says he thinks that'll happen because the engineer struck him as a real honest, forthright guy who wants so badly to prove his workers are good guys too that he's going to get sucked right into the abyss with him. So that's how it sits. And George's parting words to Eddie? On the bright side, he said, "It only cost me $4,750. To find out it wasn't Alzheimer's after all."
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.